evening and welcome to Family Matters. I'm Jillie Jeezy, as always, with my beautiful co-host, Judge Michelle Laurent. Hi, Michelle.
Hi, Jill, and hi, everybody. Thanks for joining us tonight.
You're in Chicago, and I'm somewhere south, and you're telling me it's very, very cold there.
It's cold.
Windy and cold or just cold?
Windy and cold. I mean, I've walked my dog a couple of times, and he has no interest. And coming home. He loves
how
it.
How is the lovely and newly castrated Nietzsche?
He's quite nice, Jill. Isn't that another show?
He would be so shy and timid if we knew that we were talking about this on the radio, but he's this little hedgehog, lovely little teacup Pomeranian that is the cutest little thing who lives up to his name of Nietzsche. He's amazing, isn't he?
Well, I hate it. You know, anybody who's got dogs out there, when you get them neutered and they have to wear that little cone around their neck,
yeah,
and as a little boy to be walking down the street, such as, like, I am now neutered, it was humiliating for him.
So probably that's your next book. It'll be something about Nietzsche's recovery and road to success.
Well, you know, in the word of getting your things cut off, I thought the good karma divorce was trying to prevent that. So
right, exactly.
I think I've written that book.
Nietzsche should practice what you preach, is what you're saying.
Yes.
Well, let's be serious, because tonight we have such an incredible show. This show tonight is something that every alienated parent wants to know the recipe for. And I found this gorgeous woman in Wisconsin who is a native of Chicago, and we'll hear a little bit about that in a moment. But Basha is here with us tonight, Basha Kowalik, and she is absolutely beautiful. For those of you who've seen her picture on the internet, you'll know that she's drop-dead gorgeous and wonderful person. And welcome, Basha.
Thank you, Jill. And thank you very much for that introduction. I very much appreciate that. But who needs to be thanked is Jill, because I was contacted on the day of my birthday, and I was by Jill, and I was given a gift. I was so humbled to be asked to be a guest host. And I must say that I have talked about this to one person, two people at a time, and shared my story. And I had suffered in agony on my own for many, many years. If I can possibly help one person and perhaps share one tidbit of hope for someone, that would be the greatest gift for me.
Well, when we talked earlier today, Basha, we were talking about you have the recipe. And I said, you know, as I said just a moment ago, every alienated parent wants to know what you did and how you coped and what your recipe was for bringing your children back home. Now, we haven't told the whole thing. If everybody's read the promos, they know that you were an alienated parent for years. You had four children, and they came back to you. And that is, you know, you're who we all want to be. So tonight, we want to hear your recipe. But I want to go back a little bit and talk about your history, because you have a very interesting history. Your family came from Poland. So let's kind of start there and give us just a brief synopsis of how that all kind of transpired and what shaped you and formed you and the person you are today.
Yes, I think that is a huge part of the puzzle, because that is really the foundation of so much of who I am. I am, as I had told you before, my first language is Polish. I am a daughter of Polish immigrants who came to the United States after the war. They were on the eastern border of Poland and were taken as refugees. They were taken in the middle of the night by Russian soldiers in cattle cars to the Siberian camps. And they slept on straw taken to the labor camps. When they left those cattle cars, they were taken in the snow and in sleighs, and there was nothing but dead bodies. This is the history of my family. And they went at that time, it was Palestine, and they went through there, and then they went to, part of my family went to England as refugees, then they came to the United States, and lived in Chicago. We had a restaurant and a nightclub. I have been brought up with the notion that there is no such thing as giving up. Mm. Now, I have had a period of my life where I fell apart after my divorce. Let me backtrack. I met my ex-husband in dental school, and I excelled in dental school. I was an extremely good student. I was extremely good student early on because education was foremost in my parents' mind. They were not able to be educated. And so I worked extremely hard, as my brother did. We all did. But I was the first to get a doctorate in my family. That was the most important to my parents. That's what they wanted for their children. And that's what I had in common with my ex. I didn't see anything other in life other than to work hard. When everything started to fall apart, I really didn't see it. I didn't see any of this until I looked back at it. I did not see the personality that I married. I had four children right away because I had married 6 years before I had my first daughter. We had worked very hard. We had a lecturing business. We had two dental practices. We had a hospital practice. We lectured nationally, internationally. We had a very, very lucrative business. And when I look back at it, we had more of a business marriage than a regular marriage. And I ended up marrying a narcissist of a personality. And because I wasn't able to be controlled in the end, I was mentally and physically controlled.
What do you mean by narcissist? I mean, I know what the technical definition is, but we don't know what you mean by it.
As a personality, someone who, and I'm not a psychiatrist, but a person who lives by their own rules and regulations. They do not live by those of society, but they live by their own rules. They have they make their own rules. Law does not apply to them. The laws of custody laws, for instance. I will give you a for instance. The divorce decree called for certain visitation. The divorce decree called for informing, taking the children out of state. The divorce decree called for informing me of, as it does for everyone, informing me of medical care, of all the things that it does. I never was informed. The divorce decree.
So you're saying he got custody in the divorce decree?
Did not. No. We are in a state, Wisconsin is a state of 50-50. What happened was, and this is a tangent, excuse me for doing that, but because we're in the topic right now. What happened was I saw early on that the alienation started very, very young, very quickly.
Very young in the marriage or after
the
divorce?
Very early after the separation.
Okay.
There was a vindictiveness against me
for calling for the separation and the divorce. There's a vindictiveness for doing that because you cannot do that to a narcissistic personality. You cannot leave them. They get very upset. They get very vindictive for it. And there was going to be punishment for that. And the punishment, the greatest punishment that could be inflicted upon me was to take my children away. And if he could not...
You're telling us a story that is so very common, with the exception of the 50-50 split in Wisconsin. You're telling us a story that's extremely common throughout North America, throughout globally. So I want to get to the point where now we're talking about, because we know, what happened to you happened to me. You were married the same amount of time. All parental alienation stories are very, very similar.
Very similar.
New nuances that come out. So let's cut to the chase and talk about then you. When we talked today, we were talking about you decided that it would be better for you to let the children be than to continue pulling them in 15 different directions. So let's go from that point, Basha.
What happened is that I realized very soon that every visitation there was became havoc. It was an argument. The police ended up at the house because of accusations. It was an absolute havoc, and I realized that it was going to be an extraordinary pressure on my children.
What ages and how long were you married?
I was married for 20 years.
Mm-hmm.
The children were in the vicinity of 12. 11 and around 9.
Okay.
And the twins were 9 at that time.
Okay.
So I had 4 children, 3 daughters and a son. And it was, the stress on them was not worth it. And the way I saw it, put it in layman's terms, was this. I had 3 children drowning in the lake. And if I were to jump in to save them, we were all going to drown.
So what I'm hearing, and I don't know whether this is the communication, is that there was a piece of you that had to save yourself.
Absolutely.
As well. Because if you didn't save yourself, you would all go down? Am I hearing that right?
Exactly. And it sounds selfish. However, I knew that because of his destructive behavior, that in the end, he would self-destruct. And I would end up having to save them when he would self-destruct.
Why did you think you would be destroyed if you engaged in that fight? Why did you make that conclusion?
Because I knew that he would not stop.
There was nothing stopping him. He was going to do anything
nothing.
But just like any alienator will do to break you. To the loss of control, the loss of you as a kind of a possession was too much, and he was going to do whatever he could. But what they don't understand, I think, and if there are any alienators listening, please pay attention, that you can hurt us to a certain extent. You can break our hearts. You can take our children, and there's no question that that is sad, but you are crossing the line. I mean, at some point, our nerves go dead, and you can't do anything more to us than what you've done. And so then you begin to destroy your children and their futures. And that's what they don't understand.
And there was a point to where he was kneeling on the floor, picking up, folding some of his clothes before he left. and said, if I can't have you, nobody else will. So it shows you the distortion of a person's mind. And I knew very well that that was what was on his mind. And I knew if I fed him enough rope over time that he would choke himself.
So what? This is abstract. I would like to be able to understand what exactly did you do when you made the decision that you would all drown if you continued the fight. What exactly are you saying? What happened?
What I'm saying is I knew that I needed to rebuild myself after this divorce and prepare myself. Rebuild myself so that I would be ready for the day that the truth would come to my children and that I would be ready for the, when he would languish and the truth would come, that I could gather them up and
so
I would be there for them.
What exactly did you do? Did you stop seeing them? Did you stop your visitation? I mean, I'm just trying to find out so that we know.
At the beginning, I was like any one of the hundreds of thousands of parents. I tried everything. I tried everything and anything. Judge Lawrence, I tried writing letters. I tried emails. I tried sending gifts, which ended up at my doorstep. And, of course, my children didn't drive, so they didn't drive. They didn't bring them back. I tried sending emails with pictures and family history. I did everything to try to keep communication. None of it went to waste as I speak to my children today. Even though they didn't answer, I went to volleyball games, even though I wasn't welcome. They were angry.
What are they saying to you today about those attempts that you made at that time, about the calls, about the gifts, about the volleyball games? What are they telling you now that they felt at that time about your visits and your gifts and your calls?
They are telling me today that they are grateful that I did. Even though they, in anger at the time, said they don't want to see me. Because that's what they needed to say, because they were between a rock and a hard place.
Mm-hmm.
They had to show their anger because they were living with their father. And they had to do that because they had no choice. You see, they're put in a position, and it's not their fault.
How long?
And you have to understand that.
How long were you? And can you help us understand how long you didn't see them, or did that never happen, or what did look like?
I did not see them at all for a solid 5 years.
Was it?
In
their rescue mission?
I could not even drive by the grade school that I used to. They went to the same grade school from kindergarten all throughout high school, have been going throughout high school, and I could not even drive by that school. And I used to go to that school every day, help children read. I would be there almost every day because I was a full-time mom.
So when you say you could
well
not, you were not allowed by the courts, or not?
I emotionally could not.
Emotionally, okay. So was it kind of your choice in your rescue mission to make the decision that it'd be best not to see them, or did they absolutely refuse for 5 years?
No, they refused. And when I did try, I would go by his home. He threatened to call the police I would not even step off the public street. I would not even step on his property. for fear that I would be arrested.
Was your visitation terminated at any point or limited by the courts? The reason I ask you is so important because the fact that your story comes out well in the end, people really have to understand what happened, what hope they can have based upon understanding the facts.
The facts of the divorce decree itself was this, that we were all to seek therapy. It ended up that the only person who did seek therapy was me. I sought therapy. He was to seek therapy. He did not. The children were supposed to seek therapy. He did not continue for them to seek therapy. It was convenient because a narcissist does not feel they need therapy. And, of course, it was going to be inconvenient for him to take the children to therapy and have anything disrupted. He liked it the way it was. And I had the courts left visitation open for me. I could see the children as much as I wanted. But unfortunately, my attorney did not word it properly and did not specify exact times and dates. So therefore, there were not days of the week nor times. The decree was totally open so that the children could flow back and forth, and that was the wrong thing to do. Because it should have been specified, but it was not.
Could you not go back to court?
Michelle, that's the same thing that Bill Hudson told us, is that he made the mistake, and I think I made that mistake. I was trying not to make too much upheaval and change and trying to keep things very much the same. And he said, you know, he wanted them to feel as comfortable as Kate and Oliver Hudson could feel in going back and forth, and he didn't want to disrupt anything, and he left it very open-ended. If they decided they didn't want to come, he said, oh, that's okay. You know, so I think that's the mistake a lot of parents make.
It's the number one mistake, Jill. You're so right. Because, you know, you do this thing called reasonable visitation. I do not allow it in my court. I will not accept a document that says reasonable visitation. Because reasonable as to whoever's got the power. Mm-hmm. And that's the first step in getting a parent marginalized. I won't have it. I have signs all over my courtroom. But the thing is, you can't hold anybody in contempt either. Unless you have specific visitation schedule. So they could violate it, but they violated something that's amorphous. There's no way to say you violated what's reasonable. It can't be. So it's the number one thing that our message is, and Jill and I have always said, get it specific. Don't leave the power on anybody.
I applaud you for that.
Yeah.
I applaud you for that because later on, when I did want to forcibly bring them home after he left those children many times. I can't even tell you how many times they were left alone. I really don't want to go into the criticisms of all of this because I really, really don't. But they were left so many times, and I never was informed. I found out on my own. I'm here 5 minutes, 10 minutes away, and they could have been with me. And I actually had the police department go to the house, and I forcibly wanted them to come, which was probably not the smartest thing, but I wanted to make the point. But the police department couldn't do anything because I did not have a document.
Did you ever try and go get one?
I didn't, and I'll tell you why. I was so whipped. Mentally whipped. I had been to court so many times, had been accused of so many things. There were so many motions. I had spent so much money in court.
But this is on financial things, the money, not on child things.
It was on everything. Anything.
But never.
He wanted to ruin me in every way he could.
But never, in all of this money that was spent, never just to get a visitation schedule?
No. I unfortunately did not have the best attorney.
And I think, you know, Michelle, I can hear the hesitation in your voice, and I think you have to understand, and I know that you do.
Well, I do. I'm not saying that.
But I know that there would be people who would hear this and say she did not do everything she possibly could. She did not. But
I didn't.
I remember even my own sister said to me, why didn't you do this, 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 and this? Why didn't you do this, 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 and this? You know, it's very easy to say when you're not in the moment. And unless you've experienced this and unless you've experienced the horrors that can happen in family court and with a narcissistic personality, you have no idea what it's like to go through this. And I know, Michelle, you do, but I can hear that.
No, you're hearing them wrong. You're hearing wrong is that I completely understand how people do not do that. But unless the listeners know that she didn't do that, then they can't know what to do differently.
You're right.
Absolutely. I agree. And they do need to know these things. And I will tell you that I should have done them. But I will tell you where I came from. I will tell you that there were months and months where I laid in a bed with the shades drawn, with quilts over my head and pillows over my head, with antidepressants sitting on my windowsill of every shape and kind, and could not even leave my bedroom. And if it were not for my mother that teased me out of bed thread by thread and knew that I had the strength, in the long run, she knew it was there and just teased me out little by little. And then after I had to have my neck surgery from the damage that he did from dragging me down 12 steps by my ankles on my back, that was the second time he had physically abused me, and I had to have 6-inch rods put in my neck. I was a physical and mental wreck. It's not an excuse.
But the background that you had, Basha, in your parents and the heritage that you knew and the strength that you could draw from was incredible, and you had a very strong support system, which is one of the other key parts of making it back and doing exactly what you said. You had to be a strong person for your children to come back to, and that's what you did. You waited actively, is what I like to call it. You got yourself together, and you worked towards that end of having your children come home to you.
I just somehow, deep down, even through my deepest depression, somehow, as deep as I knew, the deepest hole that I sat in, I knew someday, throughout all of this, I knew he would falter sometime. I didn't know how long it would take. And the only prayer that I had was my mother helped me raise those children. They were as close to my mother as they are to me. And my only prayer, it wasn't for me that they would be close to me, but it was that they would be close to my mother once again.
Mm-hmm.
Because I knew that someday they would regret if she passed, that
right.
they would not reconnect with her.
And now they've all come back to you, thank God. They've all come back to you. And one thing that I want you to tell our listeners is, what do they say to you now about what went on then? And what didn't they like? And what would they have had you do differently?
Well, I have 4 children, and they are all 4 very different characters. So they approach this all in a different way. My eldest daughter, Sonia, was the one who bore this in a very difficult way. She still has issues, post-traumatic issues with it. She was the one who was bore upon the most by him. And she has retracted the most from him. She's a very black and white person, and she is waiting for an I am sorry from him for doing this to me. And I don't know if that's ever going to happen. I don't know if she's ever going to forgive him. My
she's
second
your eldest,
daughter, who,
Basha, she's your eldest, right?
She's my eldest. And I don't know if that's going to ever happen. If he, with his personality, I don't know if he's ever going to say I'm sorry to her. I don't care if he, I don't care what he's done to me. I'm an adult, and I was his spouse. But what he's done to my children is a different matter.
Mm-hmm.
I don't need an I'm sorry to me, but to my children, yes. My second daughter, who is 20, she has a different personality. She understands his problem, but she loves him because that's her father, and she can overlook it. My twins, on the other hand, were much younger, and they have put it neatly in a box, and it's in their closet. They still have not dealt with it. Someday it's going to fall out of their closet when they open the door. And they have not really, they know his side, they don't really know mine, and they'd really not, they would rather not go into it too deeply. And someday they will ask, and I don't go into it.
So let me interrupt you right here. This is a really important point because so many parents feel so much the need to explain themselves. So this is a piece that you just, and I hope we get to talk about how it happened that your children came back to you, but nobody's talking about what happened or how it happened. You're just being there with each other. Is it okay that way, or does it feel like the white elephant?
It has to be okay because it is a white elephant to an extent. With you have to treat each child individually because each child processes it individually. They were at different ages, and they come to it in a different way. You see.
Yeah, but that doesn't tell me why you don't talk to any of them about it. That's what I'm trying to understand.
No, I do talk to them. I talk to them at the level of which they require to be talked to. My eldest daughter, I can talk to freely.
Mm-hmm.
Freely. In fact, she's graduating with a degree in psychology. We talk to it on a psychological aspect and very freely because she needs to talk about it. She had panic attacks, she has post-traumatic stress.
Yeah.
She needs to talk about it. On the other hand, my two youngest do not want to talk much about it, but they are attached to me like at the hip.
Yeah.
But they also still love their father because it's their father. And that's okay with me. You see? But they understand his foibles.
And the middle child.
And the middle child, she loves him for who he is, but she understands his personality as well. So everyone, you can't just take a big sweep of it. You must understand each child, their age and their circumstance and their personality.
Basha, your oldest daughter, because she is getting a degree in psychology, does she understand that with her father that this is a sickness?
Yes, she does. She does, but there is an aspect of anger left that she deals with, and there is also an aspect that all she really wants is an I'm sorry.
What about if we go back to when the kids were alienated from you? How do they respond to to you when you talk about that time period in their lives, when their dad was really attacking your character. How do they tell you now they would have liked to have responded to that?
I do not. And I will tell you why I don't talk about it. I'm going to tell you my premise on that, my basic idea on that. When a child looks in a mirror, he sees two people. He, she sees two people. He sees an image of, they see an image of their mother and they see an image of their father. That's who their self is made of. When you talk badly about their father or mother, that hurts. And 2 weeks ago, I got very angry and I had an outburst. I'm not a perfect person,
mm-hmm.
and I have my moments.
Right,
we
all do.
I want to defend myself. We all do.
I had one today.
Okay. And I have my moments. Generally, I'm very, very mild-mannered, and I generally try to keep quiet, but I have my moments. And I had an outburst, and my middle daughter began to cry and said, "I don't want to hear about this, Mommy. I don't want to hear about it. It hurts me when you do that, when you talk about Poppy like that." And it was a reminder again to follow my own philosophy that I cannot talk about him, because all I'm doing is if I shoot a dagger at him, I'm shooting one at my own child.
Mm-hmm.
And that is the most difficult thing that we must do, is try to control ourselves.
Well, I think one of the most profound things Dr. Amy Baker has ever said is when you turn a child against a parent, you're turning a child against himself. And that's so simple and so has so much common sense to it. And if an alienator could understand that, just like I said earlier, if they could just see the harm that it's doing to the child in taking away half of that person or calling half of that person, you know, a horrible name or a horrible thing, your mother is this, your father is that. It's just horrific for that child.
It is so hurtful. And again, you don't realize it unless a child is forthright and will verbalize. And I have a child who is my middle daughter, Misha. She is very verbal, and she sat and cried. She's 20, and she said, "Mommy, please don't do that. It hurts me." And it was a very poignant moment to me to hear her say that to me, and I will never forget it. And I'm not saying that I'm a perfect person again and I won't do it again, because I probably will out of anger, because it's a defensive mechanism. I wish my children would know my side of the story, because they don't, all of them. There's so many instances. This is a 6-year, 7-year, 8-year history. And I want them to know, but they can't know everything. But you know, the book written by Richard Warshak, The Divorce Poison,
mm-hmm.
that poison is within that person who is inflicting it. Leave it there.
Mm-hmm.
Leave it there. Don't spread it. Leave it within that person.
So, Basha, are there things that you feel people are making mistakes about in a parental alienation situation that you would like to, you know, yeah, this is sort of like having a platform. The mistakes you made that you would say to people, do this differently?
The mistakes that I feel that are made are the lack of patience. You must have patience. You must have self-control. You must control yourself. Not worry about controlling the other, the alienator. You cannot control the alienator. It's an impossibility. You can only control yourself. When you stop worrying about what the alienator is doing and control yourself, and you must move, and you must begin to have a life outside of your child.
Mm.
I think that is
great
one of the
advice.
Most crucial things.
That is
you
great
must
advice. But that's not to say, Basha, that when you do that, when you begin to have a life again, that you stop thinking about your child. And as we discussed today, you know, there's not a moment that I don't think of my children. There's not a moment that I'm not so sad that they're not with me. But you have to go on living, and you can't just fold up and as Michelle and I always say, who do you want to be when your kids grow up? You've got to make your life a positive step forward in the right direction. And so many alienated parents are so sad and so desperate. They have such a hard time pulling themselves out of it. But you are a testament to what we want to be, and to see that your children have come home and that you moved to a higher place, and you didn't languish in that depression with the covers pulled up over your head. You needed a jump start from your mom, no question, but you did it. And I think you are a cheerleader to all of these people that can't do it on their own. They've got to look at you and say, look, Basha did it. I know I can too.
Everyone can do it.
I just want to make sure we've exhausted the list. We've got lack of patience, lack of self-control, not worrying about controlling the alienator, just controlling yourself and have a life outside of your child. Beautiful, beautiful.
And one more.
And I'm asking, is there more?
There is one more. And this, I have to pay tribute to a court counselor who was appointed by the Racine Family Court. His name is Mr. Donald LaFave. He told me while we were going through our divorce one thing that I have followed this whole entire time. He told me four words, and I will never forget them. This is what got me through and will get me through the rest of my life. He told me, Basha, take the high road. Take a high road. It were four simple words, but I will never forget it. He said, I know you can take the high road. I spoke to him today, and that is what gets you through. Take the high road. It's not the easy road, but it is the road. And I can tell you that is what gets you to the place you need to get to. The children will go to the person who has the most strength, and that patience, the self-control, getting a life outside your children makes you a strong person. Children will gravitate. My mother has said this the entire time. You must get your strength, Basha, because the children, and my mother is the wisest woman I know, the children will gravitate to the parent who has the greatest strength.
For a while at least, children will gravitate to the parent with the most power, because if as you're describing your former husband as being a narcissist, there's no strength, but there was power. And for a time, children, in their fear of being in a broken family and going through the divorce, feel safer with somebody who seems to have the power than the internal strength. Otherwise, there may be very little parental alienation.
Well, so, let's go on with that, though. Why do you think, then, Basha, the children made the decision, all four of them, which is so highly unusual, for all four of them to come back at the same time? How did they then come to that conclusion that now we want to be with Mom? What was the breaking point?
The breaking point, I think that they finally saw that, I was not who they were told I was. They were able to spend enough time with me, little by little, but you see, this takes time. You know, that's why I say patience, because time is the only thing that can smooth stone. The water must flow over that stone until it smooths it. It's time. And I did not have visitation. It was just little pieces of time, but it was little bits and pieces, and they saw me over time that I was not who he said I was. And it was over this time, and it was by action that they saw it, and it was because I did not speak about their father.
If you hadn't seen them for 5 years, how did they get communicated this action? How were you this person that they got wind of? Because it must have been through that.
Because I continued to send letters. I continued to go to the house.
All the time.
Invite them for breakfast. Absolutely.
Okay.
Do not stop. I was told by my daughter, I don't want to see you again. Do not come to my place. Do not do this. I continued. My daughter was in a play. I was the first one by the stage door with roses. She didn't want to take them. I gave them to her. It didn't matter. I never took no for an answer.
Oh, my.
Mm-hmm. Never. Never take no for an answer, because that child is not in the position. They are in between a rock and a hard place, like I said. They are not in the position.
We have a caller, Basha. I'm going to pick up this call. Good evening, caller.
Absolutely.
Caller, are you there?
Yes.
What's your name?
Hi, good evening.
Hi, my name's Mike.
Hi, Mike. What's your question for Basha?
Well, actually, it's more of a comment. I definitely agree with her. She made a comment earlier about, you know, the whole fact that a narcissistic person, you know, it's all about power, and the other individual is about strength. I'm in a situation where I've been alienated from my children for almost 3 years now. I've been going through a divorce, and when she said that, it really made me think, because my ex-wife made a comment to me before our divorce that I was the strongest person she's ever met. So when she said that tonight, it just made me think about the fact of where she is, and she's very narcissistic in her personality. How does that, when do you draw a line as far as when strength overcomes power? Does that make sense?
I'm sorry, I didn't hear the last part.
Well, we're talking about strength and power. When is the strength a victor over power?
When is strength a victor over power?
Well, your strength is in your ability to be a good father and to not alienate your children, to not discuss your wife in a bad light to your children. That will be your strength.
Basha, what do you
children,
do? I'm sorry. What do you do?
Your
in the
children.
Case? I'm sorry.
Go ahead. Your children
go ahead,
will
Basha.
See.
Your children
will see in the long run that you are not vindictive, that you are mild-mannered, that you are not shooting a dagger at neither her nor them. And even though, like I said, I'm not perfect and I have done it myself, but in the long run, you will win.
Thank you, my dear Paul.
Basha, is it your opinion that almost always the truth comes out eventually?
It
is that
does.
Your opinion?
The truth rises to the top.
Mm-hmm.
It does. I'm a testament to that. I sat at my Christmas table in the house that my children grew up in, that I have been trying to sell for the past 5 years, and I have not been able to. And God made sure that I wouldn't sell it. And the reason he didn't was because he wanted my children to come back to this house, to move back into this house this past week so that we could share our dinner together.
So wonderful.
For them
to
share the last 6 months before they go away to school.
So is the spiritual piece a big piece for you? Is that on your list of how to get through
this? That is huge. And I have one thing that my aunt told me during my recovery, my spiritual, my emotional recovery, and that is this, that, you know, there are times when we're lost. We're like lost sheep. And God is our Father, and we are like little toddlers. We're his children. You have to grab God's hand, and you have to walk with him, because we cannot see above the horizon, but he can. And you have to grab his hand and not let go, and know that he can see far beyond where we can. And know that in the future, he will lead us in the right direction. And I'm not a Bible banger, but that's a simple truth. And I did not see any of this a year, 2, 3 years ago, even a month ago. But it is plain as day. And I sat this past 15th of December sitting at my birthday table, and I thought to myself, if God calls me today, I will die a happy person.
Basha, I'm going to grab one more call. We just have a few minutes left. It's from Fort Wayne, Indiana, I believe. Caller, are you there? Caller?
Hello?
Hi, do you have a question for Basha?
Hi, this is Basha's daughter, Sonia. I wanted to make a comment.
What is it, Sonia? Welcome. What's your comment?
Hi. I just want to say that any parents who think that they have lost their children, there is hope, and to always hold God's hand, and that the people that show that they love their kids the most will persevere, and God will never leave their kids without their mothers or fathers, and that my mother has been everything to me, and I never really realized that until I became closer to God and realized how good of a mother she was. And I am so thankful that she was there for us for those many years, and I never even realized it until my eyes opened. And that, it's just so emotional for me. I'm so sorry.
Well, not only emotional for you, little lady, let me tell you, because
yeah.
I'm sitting here thinking, you know, I have 4 children, and I'm hoping that someday one of them is calling into a radio station saying what you're saying right now.
Yeah, it's very difficult when you're a kid and you're getting manipulated like that from a parent, and living in a life of fear, but once I started taking God's hand and I started realizing who my mother was, and I've never been more peaceful in my life.
I'm so happy for you, and I'm so happy that you reunited with your mom, and I'm happy that you understand the dynamic of what went on in those years that you were with your mother, and how she persevered. And I hope that you can continue to have some sort of relationship with your father at some point, and
yeah.
and that that's healed, and that your father is healed, and that you can grow up and be a successful young woman. I don't know how you could not be hearing what you just said, but I just hope the best for you in your life, and that you can have a successful relationship, and that you don't have trust issues or self-esteem issues, and that everything works out perfectly for you.
Yes, thank you so much, and
I pray
thank the
you
same
for calling in to help other people. That's wonderful.
That's the least I can do. Thank you so
much.
Okay,
Basha,
bye.
Do you have anything to say to Sonia?
This is a child who called me over 5 years ago. I remember the moment, and I remember where I was driving, and she said, "You're not my mother anymore. I don't ever want to talk to you again." And now, here she is.
Oh.
So if that gives anyone hope, I don't know what does.
I don't either.
Yeah,
well,
that does it all.
And I want to reiterate this recipe: patience, self-control, prayer, make a life outside of your children, and take the high road, and then set the oven on time.
Can we quote you as the Basha recipe?
That's the recipe to end parental alienation.
Well, I think that's a recipe to withstand it, certainly.
That's the recipe to withstand it, and I am.
Just turn it
I've
around.
Been called. I've been in a stupor for all these years, and I, again, can't practice dentistry. And I've been waiting for a call, a divine call, to see what life would bring to me next. Two books are in the works. One for adults for parental alienation, and one is going to be a picture book for very young children to help them understand and help them understand why they're hurting when two parents are doing this. I think it's necessary to have something like that written, and those are going to be my next two projects, and I can't thank Jill enough, and Judge, I am thrilled to be in your humble presence.
Well, please call me A. Michelle. And second of all, I've learned a lot, and it's really helpful. I'm loving the Basha formula, and how you get patience is a whole story, how you find the self-control. But we all know it when we see it. We all have it inside of us, even though sometimes we need some skills and some push. But this sets a trajectory for what we need to be. And it's been really valuable. I'm glad for your success. It's no wonder you've had a success. You have a lot of wisdom.
If anyone wants to try to reach you, I know you're on Facebook.
I'm on Facebook, please. I answer all of my messages. I'm here. I will answer
all of them.
I'm
going to spell your name. It's B-A-S-C-I-A, and your last name is K.
Actually, it's B as in boy, A, S as in Sam, I-A.
I-A.
And the last name, yes, last name is K-O-W, A-L, as in lamb, I-K.
Okay.
And
so I'm Facebook, if they want to reach you, they can, and
yes,
you will respond.
And they can
respond.
Reach me through you. I'm one of your friends. And
absolutely, yes. Yes.
So I can be found.
Thank you so much for being here tonight. This has been just an amazing show, and there's not many times I cry, but, boy, Sonia sure did it. Thank you, Sonia.
Yeah, thank you, Sonia, too. And
very special child.
Basha, dziękuję bardzo, powodzenia.
Oh, dziękuję bardzo.
Take care of yourself and have a good New Year's, everybody.
Happy New Year's.
You too. Everyone have a great New Year's.
All right. Good night. Bye-bye.
Good night.
Night.